For the first time in four seasons, Tom Brady spent his Super Bowl Sunday watching the game and not playing the game. And while he did look rather spiffy in his 100-year NFL ceremonial burgundy blazer, he posted this yesterday. I'm not wearing a blazer to next year's Super Bowl.
Tank top?
And when asked, probably not. When asked about his future on his Instagram Q&A, Brady's answer was this blank stare. A little bit of a shake right there. Nick, what do you make of all of Brady's social media activity? He seems to be having fun with the whole indecision.
Last month and next month. I'm all for fun. I'm the guy at the table who's always all for athletes having fun, expanding their brands, all these things. It is a little odd for Brady, though, to be engaging in this. It's not bad. This is not a value judgment. Okay, there is no positive or negative side of this, but it's a departure. It is different from the way he has traditionally conducted himself. When we've seen Tom draw attention to himself outside of just what he does on the field, it's almost always been related to either TB12, you know, branding, or his family. And now it is more of the look at me stuff. And I people think because I'm critical of how Brady played the last year and a half that I dislike Brady. I think Brady is the model pro athlete in America. He's been a consummate teammate. He's won at the highest of levels. He's done it through multiple systems. There's never been a bad headline about him. And I give him all the credit in the world for it. So this isn't a criticism, but it is an observation that it's different. That posting the Super Bowl commercial preview that we didn't know was a preview the Thursday night before the Super Bowl, where it hijacked that news cycle a bit. And now this Instagram Live where are you going to be? And just the quizzical, I don't know what my answer is. Those are departures from the norm for Tom Brady.
But what's the norm for Tom Brady? Because he posts a lot. But what, you said it's different. It's different from what? He's never gone through anything that's even been remotely close to anything controversial for him.
But the norm is he's in the Super Bowl. He's got a little more free time this time. The norm is he's in the Super Bowl. So, and from a social media perspective, he hasn't had time to really learn about it. And I can say this with kids. And kids, now that are in high school and middle school, you want to be able to be part of their world. And Tom has a unique ability to be in those spaces, which I'm sure his kids find interesting, and it probably creates some sort of connection. I mean, my TikTok game is off the hook. But there's a relatability to that,
sure,
too. So I don't think we can say that it's a look at me, because there's nothing in his history where he's ever been a look at me type athlete. So I think it's more a function of some free time and probably relating to his kids.
You know, I don't think it's look at me, just like you mentioned, Coach, but I think the whole picture with him walking in or out of the stadium, that was all about the commercial. That was all about making a couple bucks with Hulu. So to me, that really didn't have much to do with Tom Brady as the brand or as the guy that we'd see on the football field. I think it was certainly a money play. It was a good decision by Hulu to make a commercial that made sense, and it plays on all of our heartstrings. We're all trying to figure out, what is Tom Brady going to do? What's his next step? The other part, this tweet that he did yesterday with the tweet live and trying to figure out where he goes next, to me, he didn't say anything. So it wasn't Tom Brady saying, this is what I'm going to do, or look at me. It was just, hey, I haven't made a decision. I also think it's putting a little bit of pressure on the Patriots to say, well, listen, which way do you want to go? And Tom Brady has the ability to say, listen, I'm not sure where I want to go yet, but I can certainly push the Patriot fans in the right direction to hopefully allow them to put pressure on the organization if there was ever such a thing that would help the organization make a decision.
And hasn't he, Nick, sort of earned the right to play around with this a little bit and have some this non-decision,
He's earned the right to do whatever he wants to do. But observing it honestly, he has not earned the right for us to lie about what's happening. Okay? And I'll push back a little bit with
what
he's never
lying
been.
About?
Well, to act as if Tom Brady going on Instagram Live, accepting the question and allowing up on the screen, where are you going to be next year, just so he can do that quizzical look. That is very unpatriot way-y of him. I don't care. It's not bad. And the idea that he's never been a look-at-me guy, I mean, Tom versus Time was a thing that happened during the regular season, a documentary being made on him and his life and his quest for, I don't even remember at this point, his fifth championship, his sixth championship,
he probably
whatever
wanted
it was.
To document the fact, I don't know if you know this, but there's a lot of people on shows that talk about how Tom is done, and at some point they'll be right, And so for him to be able to document him overcoming something that nobody else has been able to do, I actually think there's value to that outside of whatever personal publicity he got. He was documenting something that other athletes had not been able to do.
Of course. And I thought it was a fascinating inside look, and I'm glad he did it. But it happened. It was the who's. I'm just curious. We got how many players in the NFL? 50. You call it 1,600 players. Yeah. I'm just curious. How many promoed, pimped their Super Bowl commercial a couple days before the game? There's one. And we got how many?
How many have six Super Bowl rings?
Okay, oh, so again.
There's one.
Right, so you're making the argument that he has earned it. I'm making the argument.
And he pimped his Super Bowl. He did one picture.
Okay.
He did what he's supposed to do. That's what you're supposed to do. If you're going to have a Super Bowl commercial that everyone's going to talk about, absolutely. Here's the other thing about Tom Brady, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, he certainly has deserved it. And there is life after the football. And I think that's what he's trying to set up at some point, the life after football, maybe with the social media posts and things like that. I just don't think there's anything wrong with what he's doing. He's not saying anything bad about the organization.
No.
He's not even saying anything about his decision. He's just saying, I haven't made a decision yet.
And it was one post. We're not talking about like 30 or 50 or every talk show or
no,
I mean, it was one
then it's
post.
An Instagram Live where it draws this conversation.
Nick, you've been a little hard on him. I mean,
no,
I think you've been a little
on,
hard
but
on him.
But he's not saying it.
But again, I think you guys.
My mom has posted one time
but
to Instagram.
But like, you guys think I'm being hard on him because you guys are viewing it from the prism of a criticism. I would not have a problem if, for example, a guy who has not earned the benefit of the doubt like Brady, if Odell did a documentary of his season to try to return to the top of the league. But I feel like a lot of people would. I do not have a problem with Tom documenting it. But I feel like there's giving a guy a benefit of the doubt. And then there's,
earned it.
Of course. Mm. And then there's changing the rules entirely. And fair or not, the type of things that Brady has done this offseason is the type of thing typically guys get criticized for. I don't criticize anybody for these types of things, which is why I'm not criticizing Tom. But I'm acknowledging that it's different. To act like it's not different for Brady to be publicly opining, even cutting a Super Bowl commercial about where he's going to play next, to act like that is not different from what we have always seen from them is just false.
Because he's been in the Super Bowl.
Okay, Coach,
like,
this isn't...
Like, year after year, he has time. And he did one commercial.
Okay.
It's like...
I got no problem with him doing the commercial. It's different. And the idea that because he would have done it last year. He had plenty of off-season time last year. He is right now, can we just call it what it is? He is exerting maximum pressure on the Patriots.
That's what he's doing. He's trying to gain leverage.
Exactly.
But the other thing, though, Nick. But
that's fine. But that's what he's doing. It's not random. The premise of the Hulu commercial wasn't random. Him accepting that question
calculated.
On Instagram. And it's all calculated. That's fine.
Do you
fine.
Think that's maximum pressure? You don't think he could turn up the pressure? You think one Instagram post and one commercial is maximum pressure?
Well, I think
maybe
he
it's
could
also getting fans
up.
On
I
this
think it's
side.
He could turn this up a lot more if he wanted to.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Good are the Miami Heat? Well, they're a little bit better today after getting Andre Iguodala from the Grizzlies last night. The 36-year-old former NBA Finals MVP goes to Miami with a 2-year, $30 million extension. There are also reports that the trade could land Danilo Gallinari with the Heat before today's deadline. So, Nick, are the Heat legit contenders in the East after this move?
Well, if this move also culminates with Gallinari, I think they are the second best team in the conference. Now, I don't think anyone in the East is going to be able to compete with Milwaukee. So defining if contender is, can you make the conference finals? 100%. Absolutely. They should be able to. They're right now fourth in the standings. They should be able to tick up to that 2-3 line so they avoid Milwaukee in round two. And things happen. Guys get hurt. Guys get tight. There are things to where you now look at Miami and say, man, Pat bleeping Riley, America. This guy had a good playing career. Was far better as a head coach, Hall of Fame coaching career, and I would argue Mannix has been even better as an executive than he was as a head coach. I don't know how they just all of a sudden, seemingly with no assets, get Jimmy Butler. And now all of a sudden, they might not only get Iggy, who I thought, maybe you tell me you were hearing different things, I thought he was definitely going to one of the two LA teams, but now also might get Gallinari. They already go 10 deep. I don't think their starting lineup is overwhelming, but their second lineup might be as good as their starting lineup. It's just a wildly impressive job of team building and culture building by Riley and Spo.
Yeah, a couple things. Throw in Andy Ellsberg, who's the GM down in Miami, who is like the cap master and made all this stuff work.
Has the job I want.
In the what we know department, right? We know that Iguodala is headed to Miami. He helps. Jimmy Butler has been taxed a lot this season. Iguodala is the kind of guy that defensively he's going to be able to step in and guard twos and threes and be that type of player, taking some of the pressure off some of the other guys on the roster. So assuming that he can get back into game shape, which, by the way, I'd still like to see at this point. He's been off since last June. Let's see how long it takes him to get back into shape. But assuming he can get back into game shape, that's a significant upgrade. They are not on Milwaukee's level, though, to your point, unless they add Gallinari. Gallinari is terrific. He is a 20-point-per-game scorer who can shoot the three, who can score various ways. He takes pressure offensively off of Jimmy Butler. Now, I've heard mixed things in the last 12 hours about whether or not that deal goes through. The Thunder are notoriously tough to deal with, but they are motivated to deal Gallinari, who is not part of their long-term future. So if they get Gallinari, I think they can compete with Milwaukee.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I was going to follow up on. Compete so you with. Think that if they get Gallinari, that they could, let's just assume full health for both sides, that could be a series that we're seeing a game six of, and you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think you could see a game six. I just think Bam Adebayo is great, a defensive player. Eric Spoelstra, excellent coach. He'll find different ways to kind of attack Giannis, maybe force him to be a perimeter shooter. And what worries me about Milwaukee, and when you talk to people in the Bucks organization, it worries them too, Eric Bledsoe. Eric Bledsoe remains somewhat of a concern because the last two postseasons, he has struggled at various points. Against Boston 2 years ago, he really struggled. The conference finals last year, he struggled. This year, there is no Malcolm Brogdon safety net. It's Eric Bledsoe and George Hill, who's been good, but it's Eric Bledsoe who needs to step up and play. If he struggles again, it opens the door.
And one last very quick point. Listen, Iguodala just turned 36, hasn't played basketball all year. He was playing limited minutes last year, but what he instantly adds is top of the league level maturity and playoff experience. And as good as this Heat team has been in the regular season, they haven't been very good on the road, which I think speaks to the lack of maturity. And once the postseason comes along, Kendrick Dunn, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero have never played a big game in their respect or a real big game in their respective careers. Iggy will take some of the pressure off them in that regard.
No matter what happens over the next 12 hours, the big winner at the trade deadline is Andre Iguodala. He played golf for 6 months and now has a 2-year, $30 million
contract. And got an extension.
That's what I'm saying.
Got to Miami, no state tax, an extension. Unbelievable.
Life is good for Iggy right now. Back here. here with Chris Mannix. We're talking Zion Williamson, the 19-year-old Pelicans phenom coming off his worst career performance Tuesday night. And to make matters worse, he suffered a right toe sprain that could hamper him tonight against the Bulls. Keep in mind, Zion missed the first 3 months of the season coming off knee surgery. Kind of begs the question, Nick, you starting to worry that Zion won't be able to hold up for an entire season?
No, and before the show, we, you know, our wonderful production staff puts together our list of topics, and I looked at this one curiously because, listen, it's a toe injury that's not even as bad as they thought it was going to be. People are trying to speak an injury concern into existence with Zion because at Duke we saw his shoe blow out and he dealt with that there. That was a freak happening. And then a real thing, the knee injury before the season that slowed his rookie season down and cost him the first half of the year. But this toe injury is the regular wear and tear of an NBA year. It's not even going to keep him out for a game. Go ahead, Jenna.
The regular year has only been like 7 or 8 games, though.
Yeah, but he's not going to. But let's see if he has another actual injury to me before I'm concerned about it. Everyone, it feels like his body shouldn't be able to handle his weight.
Right.
But why? Why? People, I would imagine, thought the same thing about LeBron. And he ended up being the most durable athlete we've seen in this league, this side of Karl Malone, maybe ever. Karl Malone, by the way, another guy who it's like, really? Can his body handle it? Those are the two most durable players we've ever seen. Now, Karl Malone wasn't as explosive as Zion. LeBron obviously was nearly as explosive as Zion. The reason to me, Mannix, this is a topic is because there's so little parts of his game to pick at. Like, how do you have a polarizing opinion on Zion? He seems incredibly likable. He's a freak athlete. He was awesome at Duke. He's been great so far in his career. So how do you have a discussion about him? It's finding what could be a problem. At least that's how I see it.
Yeah, look, the toe injury is not an issue. Stuff like that comes up. Him playing poorly against Milwaukee is not an issue because that's the number one defense in the NBA. Going up against a guy who's in contention for the defensive player of the year in Giannis, I mean, that's welcome to the NBA the hard way. The counter argument, I don't disagree with you, but the counter argument I'd make to the Zion, are we sort of willing it into existence, is Blake Griffin, right? Blake Griffin's a guy that played with great explosiveness, who is kind of top heavy with some of that bulk. Went through knee injuries multiple times, dealing with one right now. So I think Zion's going to have to slim down this offseason to take some of the strain off that lower body because we've never seen a player like him. We've never seen a player that plays with that type of spring who is weighing, who's pushing close to 300 pounds. It just, they don't exist. And Blake's out there kind of as this maybe example of a guy that, you know, could be the pattern, a copy for Zion.
Or is there something to maybe developing and honing the outside shot a little bit more so it takes less pressure off whatever game you might have in the post, the wear and tear that might
cause? That'll happen eventually. Yeah. But that is, to me, those are two separate discussions. The guy, if he never improves, if he never gets better, is an all-star for a decade. Right now this year, the Pelicans, when he's not on the court, they're outscored by the opposition by around 4 points per 100 possessions. When he's on this court, they're outscoring the opposition by 10, by 10 points per 100 possessions. That's a superstar level impact immediately, as raw as he is, as young as he is, as basketball immature, if you will, not actually immature, as he is. And the Blake thing, you're absolutely right, but Blake's also dealt with some upper body injuries, right? And it does make you wonder, is Blake just a bit of a brittle guy?
You're right. It's just the one example that's out there of a guy that plays with the type of spring and lands with that kind of force at the power forward position.
And, no, it's a great example. And because Blake was his, I think, easiest comp coming out of Duke, right, where it's like, and it's one of the reasons why I was so bullish on his abilities rookie season, that Blake was a 20-10 guy immediately. Why could Zion not be that? Zion's been everything we imagined he could be. Instantly come in, be a plus help side defender, and unless you're playing the best defense in basketball, no one can stop him getting to the rim, Mannix.
No, they can't. But to spin it forward a little bit, like the Lakers won the Anthony Davis deal because they got Anthony Davis, but in the short sample size where we've watched Zion play with Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram, that's a team that's going to compete for a very long time. Like, Lonzo seems to have already developed chemistry with Zion, you know, playing in the up-tempo offense. Brandon Ingram, an all-star this year for the first time. That is going to be a team because they'll sign all these guys. Ingram, they're going to be comfortable paying this offseason. That's going to be a team to watch for the next foreseeable future.
The guy going into the game against Milwaukee was shooting 67% at the rim, getting 10 field goal attempts a game at the rim. Against Milwaukee, he got 15 field goal attempts at the rim. He just couldn't finish them because, as you mentioned, that team defense and Giannis going to end up like LeBron. Could have won a couple Defensive Player of the Year awards and ends up winning maybe none because people look at the offensive numbers and have it take away from what he was doing defensively. I have no concern about Zion. None.
And Jenna, to your point about the three-point shooting, it's remarkable that he's already shooting close to a little over 40% from three. Now, it's not a big sample size.
And it's all from that first game.
Right.
That first game going forward.
But it's like, it took Blake Griffin like a decade to become a three-point shooter. A lot of guys take, Giannis still isn't even there yet.
Ben Simmons 104 years.
Ben Simmons, we're still waiting at this point for that to happen. But it took, the fact that he's comfortable taking shots from out there right now.
Is a great
sign. I
think
portends well for the future.
All right. Not only did Tom Brady have to watch the Super Bowl from the sidelines this year, I love you, Nick.
Yeah.
Tom Brady had to watch his former backup, Jimmy Garoppolo, while Brady's still deciding where he should take his talents next season. A USA Today column is suggesting the Niners replace Jimmy G with his mentor in Tom Brady. Nick, what do you think? You agree with that? Is there any merit to that?
Oh, there's merit to it, I suppose, because the Niners can get out of Jimmy Garoppolo's contract if they want to for only $4 million in dead money. And whatever Kyle Shanahan says moving forward, we know how he feels about Jimmy G. We know. After the Super Bowl, he was asked about his play. He said, I thought he was all right, which is about right. During the Super Bowl, we saw what he thinks about him at halftime, minute 44, three timeouts, chance to go take the lead. Nah, man, I'm going to go ahead and sit on this and then run the ball on first down, run the ball on second down, only take a shot downfield after the Chiefs call timeout and force your hand. With that said, they are not moving on from Jimmy Garoppolo this summer to go to a 43-year-old Tom Brady, who, for all my criticisms of Jimmy G, was not nearly as good as Jimmy G this year. Now, he was better at not turning the ball over, which is Garoppolo's biggest bugaboo, but no. I mean, is it fun to think about the Niners trading Jimmy Garoppolo back to New England for a second-round pick and Brady going into Northern California, where he's from, on a team that is, I think, right now far better, well-rounded, and with a great tight end, a good offensive line, all these things we say Brady needs? Yeah, but I don't think it would be an upgrade for the Niners, and the Niners got to be looking at this coach long-term, and even if you're higher on Brady than I am right now, he's not a long-term answer for anybody.
Well, what happened at the end of the half wasn't a function of Jimmy Garoppolo. It was a function of Patrick Mahomes and that respect that they had for them. So to say it's just about Jimmy at halftime, that's not true. In the second half, he was throwing the ball. He was 18 for 21. He was doing a lot of good things. They put their faith in him, and everybody's frustrated because they didn't run the ball more. So to say that he feels a certain way about Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't think that's a fair depiction of what happened or truly how he feels. Now, the idea of Tom going to San Francisco, the systems are as polar opposite as you can get. New England's system is based on maybe one motion, which really isn't a motion, it's truly a shift, to gather information. Everything is pre-snap information, primarily stationary, or one information gathering movement, where San Francisco is shift, motion, things change rapidly.
Play
defensively.
Action-based.
It's not even that part of it. It's just the pre-snap component. They don't fit. They don't fit what Tom does, and they don't fit what that system is. So the idea, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Yeah, I hate the idea. I think you don't get much older. And that's a big jump from where Jimmy G is until where Tom Brady is.
15 years.
That's crazy. You don't do that, especially when your team made the Super Bowl. Jimmy G is a Super Bowl playing quarterback, a guy that, of course, he didn't win the Super Bowl, but he also played the best player in the NFL in Patrick Mahomes, one of the best coaches in the Hall of Fame.
He was out playing Patrick Mahomes for most of the game.
For a long time. department, one of the best coaches, Andy Reid, certainly a Hall of Fame coach. But also, you got to think about this. Jimmy G certainly is older, but he's only had 26 starts in the NFL. And if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm saying he's still a very young quarterback as far as starting goes. And then you go out there, you make this team better. You make Jimmy G better. You don't trade. And in this situation, when you lose a Super Bowl, you don't panic and start saying, oh, we need to start shuffling the cards. You try to make your team better.
Coach, there's one thing, though, I'm going to take major issue with what you said, which is what the faith Kyle Shanahan did or did not show in his quarterback at the end of that half. If you are so afraid of the other team's quarterback, then you have to go try to acquire points. They weren't leading. It was 10 to 10. The answer can't be we're so afraid of Patrick Mahomes in the second half when he has 30 minutes to score that we aren't going to try to score right now because we might give him 45 seconds at the end of that half.
They were in a position to score, right? There's the offensive pass interference, so they would have.
But that was only because.
Were they in a position to score?
Only because Andy Reid forced their hand. Coach, he let 40 seconds run off the clock, then they ran the ball, let another 40 run off the clock, ran the ball, and then Reid called timeout. They were going to the half.
You cannot be mad at him when we talk all
his
week.
His GM was mad
just
at
hold
him.
Okay, he hired ahead. The GM. Let's relax on that. So you can't be mad at him because of his respect for Patrick Mahomes, and this happens all the time, where people think, oh, we're going to go get a quick score. Oh, we're going to change the momentum. You do change the momentum for the other team.
Yeah, if you
and then your team going into halftime, instead of feeling really good about being at 10-10, is suddenly down 17-10 because you made an irresponsible decision against an explosive offense, and then we're sitting here going, I can't believe he gave Patrick Mahomes another
quick strike offense.
A quick strike.
It's only irresponsible if you don't trust your quarterback not to turn the ball over. The only way
that's not even about turning the ball over. It's about giving the other team an opportunity for the last shot. Why not play for the last shot? What's wrong
with it? They played for no shot, Coach. We can say because they ended up throwing it downfield, but we watched that game. There's a minute 44 left. They don't call timeout. They then on first down with a minute left, run the ball, use the whole play clock. On second down, run the ball again. They don't call timeout there. The Chiefs call timeout with 22 seconds left. They were going to play for no shot because he didn't believe in the quarterback.
And how would the Chiefs have felt if that offensive pass interference didn't
go through?
Andy
would have gotten killed.
And let's say they scored a touchdown or kicked a field goal, and that ends up being the difference in the game. Are you going to be sitting here going, you know, Andy Reid did a great thing. He tried to give Patrick Mahomes another shot, and he changed the whole momentum of the game in favor of the 49ers.
No, but what I will tell you is this, and I apologize, Brian. What I will tell you is this. Andy Reid knows he's got a great quarterback. He wanted to roll the dice that my quarterback can do something with 20 seconds to go score. Kyle Shanahan said, can my quarterback with 100 seconds and two timeouts do something? Nope, don't trust him. That's what the action should.
Well, no, I think Coach is actually right. I think that what you say, if you're the 49ers, is that we held Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, to 10 points in the first half of a football game. If we can figure out a way to hold him to 10 points in the second half, we can outscore them in the second half. The one thing you couldn't account for if you are the San Francisco 49ers is that the Kansas City Chiefs was going to score 21 points in 6 minutes and 13 seconds in the fourth quarter. If you tell me that they score only 14, then at that point it's a different type of game. You have a chance to win it at the end.
But that's the whole reason for the thought process is because they can score 20 points.
That's the reason why you don't give them the ball back.
Yeah, you don't give them another opportunity to go score, you know, and change the whole momentum.
You want them to be more aggressive.
No, I know people will be surprised by this. Philosophically, when it comes to football, I actually agree with Coach the vast majority of the time. We talk on and off the air about kind of bigger picture football stuff, and I agree with you most of the time. This one, I categorically disagree with the philosophy. If you are up against a potent, dangerous, an offense that can score 21 points in 6 minutes, then every time you have the ball, you have to try to go acquire points. The whole Patriot methodology
but
of...
But you also have to try to keep them from getting opportunities to acquire points. Not only do you recognize your strengths, you recognize your opponent's strengths, and the idea of when you know the running rebels, you don't try to run with them. You got to try to shorten the game and put yourself in a position to win at the end.
Going into the game, the big thing that you want to do if you're the 49ers is limit their possessions. That's what you're trying to do at the end of the half. You're trying to limit their possessions.
And if you have faith your quarterback can get two first downs, you guarantee they're not getting the ball back anyway.
Hang hang on. So this Brady for Garoppolo, that's not happening?
I don't think it's happening.
Do you remember like a year ago when we brought that up at the beginning of the segment and then we didn't
this
get back
to
it? I was so excited.
We all agreed
to hear.
It wasn't happening. This
I
was
didn't
more interesting.
Agree with you. I thought it would be great. Kyle Shanahan would love to have Tom Brady, don't you think? Maybe? No. Okay, well, we wrap that up. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.